Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and my guest today from Israel is Harris V. Green. And Harris has been with me twice before this during the year. And if you would like to hear his previous podcast, please go onto either YouTube, Sue Jackson YouTube, or onto Chai FM podcasts, and you'll pick up our podcast there. Harris, hi. Nice to see you. And we're actually in new studios at the moment. So if you can see pipes, wires and things everywhere, that's what's going on. And I'm also very pleased that I'm not on TV because I got caught in the rain coming here. But our topic today is hope in the storm. And let me just tell you a bit about Harris. He was born in Cape Town. He made Aliyah 53 years ago. He is an accountant by profession, and he served as the chief financial officer for a number of Israel-based high-tech companies. He is married to Phyllis, and they have three married children, many grandchildren, and also great-grandchildren. And he's a founder of Truth Be Told, an organization engaged in public diplomacy on behalf of Israel. Before we start, Harris, I would just like to dedicate our program, as we always do, to the hostages who have now been held for 186 days and to their families who must be just going through such hell every day. And, of course, to the IDF fighting this existential battle for Israel and for us in the diaspora. I would also like to, on a personal note, thank Hatzolah in Johannesburg for their unbelievable service to our community and the way they can come into a very difficult situation and immediately bring a bit of calm in. Thank you, Hatzolah, for being there for us always. Now, Peter Bailey introduced Harris and I to each other, and I had started before then reading Harris's blogs. Now, Harris, there were a few questions that came through, but just tell me how you are.
I'm doing well, thank you.
And your family?
Well. The family, thank God, everybody's doing really well.
Good. We're going to discuss that a bit more a bit later. One of the questions that came through yesterday was, why is Israel held to such a high standard?
Actually, I must be honest, I don't have a problem with Israel being held to a high standard. I think what's incumbent on the rest of the world is to hold themselves to the same standards. I think one of the biggest problems that we face at the moment is that there's clearly a system of double standards and even triple standards that are in place. Israel is quite rightly held to the highest standard. But everybody gives themselves, all the other nations of the world, and particularly the media and the international community, they allow themselves a completely different standard, and it's a much lower standard. And the only way we're going to achieve a better world is if everybody is answerable to the same set of standards, and everybody needs to be accountable.
And can you see that happening?
Unfortunately not.
No, I must admit, you know, I saw this thing about the SS Cap Arcona, and I saw it just shortly after the aid in Gaza, those cars and vans were hit, and the IDF were blamed for it and also took responsibility to a large extent for it. But I thought, you know, this came up and it said just a day before the German government surrendered in 1945, the British Royal Air Force mistakenly believed that the ocean liner SS Cap Arcona was a warship and they sank it. The ship was carrying 7,000 women, children and prisoners who were Holocaust survivors. Now, you know, we don't hear about that, and I don't know if they were ever held accountable for that, or they just said it was a mistake.
Nobody seems to be held accountable for anything. If one reads the way in which the Americans conducted themselves in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and the way the British did, and the way that all countries that are involved in conflict, they all find themselves in situations that are difficult to deal with. And I know that it's easy to say we're in a time of war and mistakes can happen, and that mistakes shouldn't happen. They do need to be avoided, and very often at very high costs. But at the same time, like I said before, everybody needs to be accountable and held to the same set of standards.
And I think that's what people are really struggling with, the fact that others are not being held at the same standards. And we don't hear much about our hostages. Everyone's talking about the Israelis not coming to an agreement on the ceasefire. And yet they forget that Hamas is still, the terror organization are still holding our hostages all these many, many months later, 6 months already.
Exactly. I think that the fact that Hamas has been designated as a terror organization by so many countries around the world, and yet these same countries take absolutely no action against it.
No.
They carry on giving them these discounts. They, in fact, perhaps it even pays to be designated as such an organization, because then you're just not accountable to anybody, mm-hmm. and you kind of get this exemption from international condemnation.
But, you know, Yitzhak Rabin said, "We'll fight terror like there's no peace, and make peace like there's no terror." And I think that's what people need to understand, that if peace does come, Israel is the first one to accept responsibility in that peacetime. And it absolutely staggers me, I must admit, that Israel is expected to help so much. And I was reading an article by Gilad Erdan, and he presented a photo of the Palestinian Mufti with Adolf Hitler, highlighting the roots of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And he said, "The UN will be remembered as a body that has been hijacked by dictators and human rights violators, a body that rewards Nazi-like monsters. The UN breaks the Guinness World Book for rewarding terrorism. And if Hitler were alive, he would praise the UN." And you know what? I thought, my gosh, those are very, very strong words. Now, going back to you, Harris, you started the blog a long time ago. And the first blog, I think, was "We Will Prevail, We Have No Choice." Wasn't that how you started it?
That's correct, yes.
All right. So the people who didn't hear your previous podcasts, please tell me a bit about why you started it.
What I was looking for at the outset wasn't sympathy. I realized right at the very beginning that Israel would get some sympathy from the international community immediately following October 7. But I realized that, as soon as Israel took any action to defend herself and to rid the area of Hamas, that that all the sympathy would be replaced with animosity. And that's precisely what happened. So what I was looking for wasn't sympathy, I was looking for empathy. I wanted people to understand that there was a job to be done, a difficult job to be done, and one that takes a lot of fortitude and courage and self-conviction. And without that, the job just cannot get done. And I think that the world, or the so-called free world, has proved that they don't have the stomach for this. They don't want to deal with it. They think that by allowing things to go on, that we'll achieve quiet and peace for a short period of time, and they think it's going to be everlasting. It's not. And people need to understand that. And I think that's really why I wanted to keep the blog alive and keep it going for as long as I could. I'm not a trained journalist, and so finding something to write on a weekly basis, and at the same time trying to focus on personal issues and to try and give people an insight as to what we were living with over here. I thought that was important, and that's what motivated the blog.
And I must admit, that blog I have really enjoyed. For people who haven't heard about the blog, go on to Lay of the Land on Google or Safari, and you can push on blogs, and you'll see all the different people who present on who write for blogs. Harris V. Green is there, and the Lay of the Land have some amazing articles as well.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program on 101.9 High FM. My guest today is Harris Svi Green, and he's in Israel. If you'd like to send us any messages, please do so on SMS 34519, or you can telegram us on 061-895-1019. Harris, back to you again. So you started the blog. I also wanted to tell people that there's a very good article on South African cricket, and of course our young boy who was stripped of his captaincy, and that's on Lay of the Land. It says South African cricket on a sticky wicket. It's a very good article. Now, Harris, you definitely brought a lot in. Did people come to you and start talking to you and saying, this is what you should write, or what started happening?
On the one hand, one has to keep articles at a reasonable length. You cannot go on and on indiscriminately. So people say, you should have said that, or you should have been more forceful about something else. And, of course, there are those people who took issue with certain of the issues that I wrote. Nonetheless, I sort of try to fit myself into a 900 to 1,000 word article each week, and that was really and I tried to focus, like I said, on my family, on my personal experiences, because I thought that was the best way of getting the message out, and to try and create the empathy that I spoke about earlier.
And you certainly did. On March the 12th, you wrote What is Left of the So-Called Free World, when the democratic values and freedoms are in decay and refuses to outlaw terror, or is it just when it's against Jews? That's what you asked. And you said there's been a denial and a deafening silence. And tell me about the UN and how you felt about the UN not publishing, first of all, not actually even recognizing what had happened on the 7th, more or less. And then, as you said, they eventually confirmed the rapes.
Well, the rapes have been, have now been, their authenticity has now been confirmed in a UN report. But it's still, that isn't sufficient yet for the UN Security Council. They still refuse to condemn Hamas for committing any acts of terror or committing acts of violence. The other thing is that I'm sure you recall that very shortly after the hostilities began, a hospital in Gaza was bombed, and of course Israel was to blame immediately, and all the foghorns who support the cause, Al Jazeera and the BBC, and Sky News and all the rest of them, all the other international media, immediately accepted the information from Gaza. And it's since transpired, of course, or it almost immediately transpired that the damage that was caused by a rocket, Islamic Jihad rocket that was misfired and landed in the car park next to the hospital. Mm. Hamas claimed that more than 400 people were killed. And the media said immediately that when Israel actually questioned, first of all, the number of casualties, and they claimed that what happened because of a misfired rocket, everything was denied. And they said, all the media said, but the Gaza Ministry of Health and the and all the Hamas news sources are always, you know, they've got a good record and everything is invariably correct and the numbers sound reasonable. How, you know, it's yesterday, it became apparently some Islamic Jihad official announced that this was a deliberate, you know, the misinformation and the disinformation was deliberate on their part, you know, in order to try and create sympathy from the rest of the world. Yet the United Nations and the Security Council and everybody else, they're still going on with what was, you know, with the existing stories. And to me, it sounds, it's complete, I fail to comprehend exactly what is needed in order to call a spade a spade. We all know what happened. It's everything, people, victims of the rape have exposed themselves completely in the most graphic way. And yet, at the same time, none of this seems to be enough.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you think about that hospital, the Shifa Hospital, that we were accused, as you say, of bombing. It was actually Hamas itself into the car park. But we've had to go back in. Israel, the IDF have had to go back in because the terrorists are hiding there. And some of them have actually been dressed up in the maternity ward as women, pregnant women. And they are the terrorists. Now, you know, to think of fighting a war like that, I must admit that I despair. How do you stop despairing?
Again, I find it very difficult because, you know, we all went to school. We were all taught the difference between right and wrong. We were always taught that honesty was the only policy, and there wasn't people needed to be held accountable for their actions. Those are the basic values that we were taught. And yet you see today that people are allowed to get away with anything. And if the Secretary General of the United Nations can make the comment that what happened in Gaza never happened in a vacuum, then one might say that all the Israeli retaliation in Gaza also never happened in a vacuum. But of course, you know, there's a different standard for Israel and a different standard for everybody else. And that's what I find really, really frustrating. And I feel that a lot of the values that were inculcated in me as a young man at school and what I got from home, that all these things, you know, it's all been pie in the sky. It's not true. These what we thought were universal values, they are not universal values.
No.
Well, they're not universally respected values. And I find it very upsetting.
I do too. And I must admit, each day I have to speak to myself about finding the hope in the day. And the other day I actually came across this little saying, which was quite nice. And I thought, especially for our topic today is hope in the storm. And it came across like this. I'm going to hold it up so you can see it. It says H, full stop, O, full stop, P, full stop, E, full stop. Hold on, pain ends. And I thought to myself, I'm actually going to put that on my mirror, because I got a phone call yesterday from someone saying they'd just been listening to Al Jazeera and it's just too terrible. How can I possibly even say that Israel is fighting a just war? And they literally attacked me on it. I don't even know. It was somebody I do know, but not know well. And I was able to say that, because I'd also picked this up on the 6th of April, about UN says Israel approved reopening of 20 bakeries, water pipeline in northern Gaza, and amid efforts to boost flow of aid into Strip, humanitarian officials says coordination to be enhanced between military and aid workers, and the trucks were entering from Jordan to be doubled up. Now, you know, they'd authorized also the 20 bakeries. Now, you know, in World War II, you and I both come from a family, from fathers and mothers who fought in World War II. And I certainly don't remember my father ever telling me that he had dropped aid packages onto Germany as a bomber in bomber command.
No, that's absolutely correct. I think if anything that the I know my father served in North Africa, and I think if anything they were short of supplies rather than having supplies to be able to drop to the benefit of the enemies.
Well, I remember my mom saying that when she was in London, and they were bombing London, and they were given food vouchers, one egg or something a week, which she used to keep for my dad when he came back from during flying at night, every few days, so at least he could have an egg. Now, I mean, nobody was sending eggs in food packages then, that's for sure. You actually, in your blog, you said, resolving a humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza requires the immediate and unconditional release of all the hostages, and that they are an integral part of the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. And you go on to say the Red Cross, UNRWA, and other UN agencies, Hamas and the people of Gaza, they're doing nothing to actually help us. The hostages are in this unique situation in that they are excluded from all the help that is going in to Gaza. Nothing gets through to the hostages. The Red Cross have not visited them, which is an absolute travesty. And so the medicine's not being given. And we don't even know. They won't even tell us how many hostages are still alive and who is there. Isn't it? It's very disheartening. Now, one of the questions was, when you are with your friends, it came through last time as well, do you laugh? Do you joke? Do you chat? How do you cope with each day?
Basically, we take each day as it comes. Well, we've been in this situation now for just over 6 months. I think today's 186 days. It's human nature, I suppose, thank God, enables us to adjust and to accept certain things after a while. We do laugh and we do joke and we celebrate when we have the occasion. Naturally, we're not in any great rush to go on vacation or do things like that. But because our major concern obviously is for our children and for our close friends and family. But nonetheless, life goes on. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, our bowling club is open and I'm able to play around once, sometimes twice a week, and I enjoy that. But again, it's not simple. The news that we hear on the radio is not always the best. And again, the levels of frustration, particularly with the international community, and their failure to provide the empathy that we need in order to rid the world of this great evil is something that, which the frustration remains with everybody. In terms of the subject of discussion amongst friends and colleagues and things like that, it's true a lot of it is war-related, but there's time for jokes and there's a certain sort of humor that also has begun to develop. And we manage. I still wouldn't change it for anything.
I was going to say, I think that is the strength of the Israeli spirit, that they mourn with whoever is lost in the IDF or among the hostages. The entire country mourns. And you see these queues and queues or lines and lines of people of all ages lining the roads, in honor of a soldier who's just been killed and going through the city or the town, wherever they came from. I found that so unbelievably moving. But at the same time, sorry, yes?
No, what I wanted to say is that on our television news, very often they go into the rehabilitation wards in hospitals and they interview young people 19, 20, 21, 22, people who've lost limbs. And they show how these people are coping with it. And, you know, the long periods of rehabilitation and the dedication of the medical staff in getting them back on their feet and back onto walkers and things like that. And they, you listen to the attitude of these people. Now, these are youngsters. You know, I mean, I've got grandchildren that are older than some of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you listen to the way these people speak and their resolve and their determination and their will to get better without any remorse regarding what they've been through. They don't have complaints about, you know, why did they have to be born here and why did they have to do that? You hear from all of them that they've got absolutely no complaints or no grouses about having to have made such sacrifices in return for defending their country.
Isn't that amazing?
It's been unbelievable. Mm. And that's what gives me so much courage and so much inner strength.
I must admit, I also find such inner strength from that. There was a youngster on showing that he had been shot, and he was lying in bed, and he had a plaster on just next to his heart. And on the plaster, he had written that it was a miracle that it had missed his heart. And that's what he was celebrating, the miracle of it. And then another young soldier who was mourning his friends, but was able to dance. And this, you know, I remember seeing somewhere that it said joy is actually, what did it say? Joy is a form of resilience, that's right, and of resistance. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, it's so true, because you see our soldiers dancing whenever they can. They suddenly, in the middle of being given food, they start to sing, or somebody plays a guitar and everyone starts dancing. And when I say everyone, I mean everyone. Some of them have lost a leg. Some of them have lost an arm. Some of them are coming with their tzitzit, their Jewish attire flowing. And the others without yarmulkes or anything, but they're all joined with their arms around each other, and they dance in joy. And that is definitely a resistance and resilience, which is, to me, I find that I have tears every time I see something like that.
My eyes really, you know, when I look at the generation, the young generation, what we call the TikTok generation, they have proved themselves beyond any shadow of doubt. They've outshone my generation. My generation, when I look at the leaders, the international leaders around the world, and I compare their resolve with the resolve of the TikTok generation, there's no comparison.
Mm-hmm.
The current generation of leadership, which is my age, or even the slightly younger than me, it's been a disaster. And I see myself being partly responsible for that. But when I look at what the children, what our young people have given us and the world and the Jewish people, it's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. And I think that as a nation, we have so much to be proud of.
And so much to dance for joy with and celebrate, quite honestly. You know, Walt Whitman once said, either define the moment or the moment will define you.
Exactly.
And let's face it, Our young soldiers going in of all different ages are certainly filling that the moment right now. And they are defining it themselves. I'll get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. My guest today from Israel is Harris Svi Green, and our topic is Hope in the Storm. You can SMS us on 34519, or you can telegram us on 061-895-1019. Harris, we were talking about the younger generation, the TikTok generation, and I thought of something that Douglas Murray said. Now, Douglas Murray, I know, is a favorite of yours and a favorite of mine. He is a very well-known journalist. British and loves Israel. And he has become our best friend, I believe, in reporting very fairly on what's going on. And he was saying, he was asked about this younger generation of the IDF. And he said he's never been so impressed with anything in his life as he sees what these youngsters are putting up with, their absolute determination to help one another, to fight for their country and for the diaspora Jews. And they do say it is an existential fight. Douglas Murray himself says that. And he says he is in absolute awe at these youngsters. And that's what you're saying, more or less, isn't it?
I'm saying exactly what Douglas Murray said, and I heard him say it, and the truth is he said it much better than I could ever say it.
Or than I could say it.
He said it in such a wonderful way, and it was so warm, and I really felt the sincerity in his remarks. And it made me proud that, that's my grandchildren's generation.
Absolutely, I agree. He also quoted at one stage that this quote, he didn't say who it came from, you might know, that Israel does not exist because of the Holocaust. Israel is the insurance policy against the next one.
Yes, I'm not sure exactly who the original person was who said that, but it's so true. It's so true and so appropriate today.
And it was good coming from Douglas Murray, because he's
absolutely,
he is able to say things that we as Jews are not able to say, because people will think that we're just being biased. Now, what I want to do, because time is going quickly, we're going to listen to a quick YouTube, and it's by Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks on anti-Semitism.
What do Jews do? The return of anti-Semitism. Let us fight it together. Let us never be guilty of having anti-Semitism in here. If some people in the world don't like us, let us respond by showing that we love one another. Let us be at peace with one another if we want to be at peace with the world. Because I tell you this from the depth of my heart, when Jews stand together, no force on earth can ever prevail against us. So when out there is despair, let us bring hope. When out there is hurt, let us heal. And when out there is division, let us show that we are enlarged and not diminished by our differences. You know as well as I do that when the world is united, Jews are divided, right? Now the world is divided. Let us do the opposite thing and show that we are united.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I'm with Harris V. Green in Israel, and we've just been listening to Lord Jonathan Sacks. Now, Lord Jonathan Sacks unfortunately passed away quite a few years ago, but that I came across that and I thought, how appropriate for our program today. That power in what he said, isn't that amazing?
Absolutely. It's so real. And you know what he said about the fact that when the world is united, the Jews are divided. And when the world is divided, then the Jews are united. And it's so true. It's so true that this kind of reflection is exactly the opposite of what one normally sees in a mirror.
Absolutely.
But it's so very, very true. So very true.
I thought his words just spoke such truth. Now, you have just written your last letter, your last in your series, your weekly letters of your blog from Israel. Why did you do that?
The reason why I stopped, frankly, is because I just found that it was a huge commitment, having to find what to write and to meet a deadline and things like that. Perhaps that's why I never became a journalist. I preferred becoming an accountant instead.
And playing goals.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, I think I've still got a lot to say, and there's still a lot I want to say.
Good.
And I intend, trying to make my views and my voice heard as much as I can. And I'll use similar I'll carry on using a blog, but just in a different format, and perhaps a little less frequently than doing it once a week.
Yeah, maybe that would help you not feel that you have to have so many words every single week. It is quite daunting, but please don't stop completely.
Now, there's just one other thing I'd like to say about that is that I got to the stage where I found that I was beginning to repeat myself. And that was beginning to bother me, that on the one hand, I felt, you know, here I am writing all this stuff. And there are people, you know, I haven't been able to convince the Secretary General of the United Nations or the leaders of too many countries around the world as to the authenticity of my complaints. but at the same time, I think that a lot of these things, they just need to be repeated. And again, when people said, oh, you know, you speak to the converted. Very often the converted themselves need to be reassured, you know, that because the waves, the tsunami that we face from Al Jazeera and from the entire propaganda machine, which is directed so specifically against us, we need to fight this. We can't afford to move out the way.
Absolutely, because in that blog of yours, what you did say, that Golda Meir had said, I know we will ultimately prevail. We have no choice. And she said, we have nowhere else to go. And that's what she said, actually, to Joe Biden when he was a newly elected Democratic senator for Delaware. Isn't that amazing? And you put that in your blog. And you also said, without a doubt, this week's hero, and this is why I don't want you to ever stop writing this blog, because these are the things that we need to hear, that this week's hero is Amat Susana. And I don't know if that's how you pronounce her. She was a resident of Kibbutz Kfar Aza, and she was abducted from her home by the Hamas terrorists on October the 7th. And after 55 days in Gaza, she was released. I heard her speak. And you heard her speak. And when you say that she's the hero of the week, I really agree with you. It's quite amazing. She had an 8-hour interview with the New York Times, and she spoke in detail about the way she was sexually abused. That definitely has to get out there.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I'm with Harris Svi Green in Israel. Well, he's in Israel. Unfortunately, I'm not. We're going to be told to wrap up shortly. So I want to go on to the end of your blog, the last blog that you did, which said Mensch with a Mission. And you write that you lament the sad passing of Joe Lieberman. Tell me about Joe Lieberman. And why you lament his passing?
Well, Joe Lieberman was somebody who, first of all, for those who are not aware, he was a member of the American Senate. He was once the candidate for vice presidency, ran for vice presidency, and with Al Gore, and I happened to be in the U.S. at the time on a business trip at the time of the election, and I remember how close that election was between George Bush and Al Gore, and where they couldn't announce, they couldn't call the result in Florida, which was going to determine who had won the presidential race.
Is that so?
Anyway, I had the good fortune on another trip to America. On one Shabbat morning, I was in shul in Washington, and I actually met Senator Lieberman there. And he was such a quiet and unassuming person. It's so different from any of the sort of world leaders we know today. He was a quiet person. He was able to work the bipartisan route. He was nominally a Democrat. He was an independent, but more with Democratic leanings. But at the same time, he was able to work together with Republicans for what he considered to be the common good of Americans. And that was his strength. He wasn't loud. He wasn't noisy. But whenever he had something to say, you always heard him. Hmm. And that's the political leader that you know, that I would like to see in the dominate the world scene, and not some of the people that we've got around today.
I'm in absolute agreement with you, I must admit. And, you know, with him, funny enough, he got some coverage even here on our news as a person with values. So, and I must admit, South Africa doesn't often recognize a good Jewish man. But, you know, Goethe said, talents are best nurtured in solitude, but character is best formed in the stormy billows of the world. And my gosh, I think that's what we are all being asked to do, face these billows of the world, these stormy, stormy billows of the world, and stand up for what we believe in, stand up for our Judaism, our love of one another, of our connection with other nations of the world, and let's be the light that we are, we can all be. Harris, would you like to say anything to end?
Just again, to say what I've been trying to say for the last 185 days, and that is to give people the reassurance that we will prevail. We really do not have any choice. And we are strong, and we also, I think, we realize our strengths. And even when the whole world comes against us, we're now on the eve of Pesach, and we say at the beginning of the Seder evening, Vehisha Amdala Voteinu, that this isn't the first time in our history that a nation has rose up against the Jewish people. It's happened. It happens generation after generation after generation, and we're still around. That is something that is unique. It's something we need to be proud of. We need to be proud of our Jewish heritage, and we need to treasure the freedom we've got. And in my opinion, the Jewish people today have got that in the form and the shape of the State of Israel.
Amen to that. And also, we will carry on telling the story.
Absolutely.
And the stories will go on for generations to come. We're going to be ending with a song. It is a song that's an Israeli song that's just come out on YouTube. It's called Hurricane. Thank you, Harris, and it's been so nice spending this time with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Vusi, and thank you, Makundi.